You are tuned in to Community Radio, WPVMLP, Asheville, North Carolina, 103.7, streaming online, WPVMFM.org, the voice of Asheville, heard all over the world.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. Increasing clouds across the mountains today, a high near 80 here in town. Partly cloudy tonight with a slight chance of showers after midnight, lows around 54. Showers likely, possibly a thunderstorm on Saturday with a high of 74. Showers, maybe a thunderstorm for Saturday night, a low around 51. Then a slight chance of showers Sunday afternoon with a high of 78. I'm Johnny Cottle on Radio Asheville 103.7.
Welcome to Twice 5 Miles Radio. I'm your host, James Nave. Thank you ever so much for tuning in. I'm going solo again today. I've started to rather enjoy these solo shows, exploring ideas I'm thinking about. Today, I'm thinking about the subject of storytelling. If you're like most people, me included, when I hear that term, storytelling, I think of a storyteller standing on stage. You maybe have likely attended a moth storytelling event. The requirement for a moth story is to draw from your own life and tell it more or less off the cuff, although most of those stories in the moth storytelling events are quite rehearsed and very, very good most of the time. Sometimes people stumble, but not all that much. It's good fun to watch. So that's the kind of storytelling that we most of the time think about. Today, I'm thinking about a different kind of storytelling. I'm thinking about the idea of our lives being stories. The entire proposition, everything that we live, do, function, interact, the way we pass our days, pass our evenings, sleep through the night, dream, and on and on and on. I'm thinking of it from the point of view of four different elements. Number one, narrative. Number two, authority. Number three, voice. Number four, ease. So there you go. Narrative, authority, voice, and ease. How does that fit into the way you live your life? The way I live my life, the way we conduct ourselves as human beings. I'll start by reflecting on the last element first, ease. Ease is the product of your narrative, your authority, and your voice, how you tell your story, how you stand strong in the story that you're telling, and how your voice expresses itself. Voice can be anything that communicates what you're sensing, how you want to tell the world who you are. So the voice could be the voice that I'm using right now, the voice in the literal voice. The voice could be what you write down on a piece of paper and somebody else reads. Your voice could be the way you express yourself physically with your dress, with the way you communicate who you are. So the voice is the way people register how you present yourself to the world. Ease is the result of the three, narrative, authority, and voice. So when you're after ease in your life, you are trying to acquire something that's smooth, that gives you a sense of place, a sense of relaxation. And when that happens, you are able to have a little clearer thinking. You're able to take a deeper breath, able to spend some time appreciating the circumstances that you are in, what you've created in this moment. I often work with people around these four concepts, narrative, authority, voice, and ease, in respect to their writing. People want to tell a story. They want to tell the story with some sort of authority. They're always looking for ways to sharpen their voice. You will often hear people say, I want to find my voice. I respond to that by saying, your voice has always been there. It's more a matter of developing a relationship with the voice you have rather than finding it. Once you realize you don't have to go looking for the voice, you can then lean into it. You can appreciate it. You can develop it. You can explore it. Ease comes with confidence. If you feel like you have a sense of the story that you're telling, Sometimes maybe even more than a sense of the story you're telling, maybe you actually have the whole story in your head. Then you can speak about it with authority, confidence. Your voice is very strong when you do this, and therefore you have the ease, and the ease is important. Now, this is good for writing. Why would this be a good idea to think about from the point of view of these four elements when you're thinking about how you live your life? Consider this. Your life is the narrative. It is the story. No matter what choices you make, no matter the directions you choose, the people you interact with, the place you live, the kind of job you have, what sort of social life you lead, every beat is part of the narrative of who you are, the life that you're living, the story that is unfolding improvisationally, every second, every heartbeat, every thought. So when you consider this as the foundation for what makes you who you are, and then you consider that you have control over the choices that you make regarding how this story that you're improvisationally telling or playing out or living into unfolds. And then when you keep in mind that ease is not always something that happens, there are rough patches, tough ways of going, lots of unexpected stuff that befalls you that can be full of grief, full of sadness, full of stress, all of those negative things that counterpoint ease. And yet when you think about it, when you're facing those tough times and you're trying to figure out what to do next, and what I mean by tough time, you could be facing a divorce. You could have a member of your family who is struggling with alcoholism. You could get the news that someone, maybe you, have an affliction like Parkinson's or cancer or MS. Go down the list of all those heavy lifting things that happen. And yet when people encounter these problems, they'll often say, if they're able to move through them and come out on the other side, they will often say they're thankful for having had the experience. And when they report that thankfulness from the experience that was rough and hard and difficult, they report it with a voice that has some ease to it. There's a gratefulness about it, an appreciative sensibility upon the reflection. 15 years ago, I had the diagnosis come through the door, prostate cancer. I was faced with what to do, how to deal with it. I felt rough. I felt pressure. I thought I was going to die tomorrow. I was panicked. I held myself responsible for it. I went down the list. And if you know people who have had a diagnosis like cancer or other things, as I mentioned a moment ago, you know how it can feel. There's a desperation there. There's not very much ease. And yet now, 15 years later, I can report that it was one of the best experiences I had in my life, the most informative experience. Fortunately, I had my prostate surgery. We caught the cancer in time, and everything worked out fine. I also know that's not the case with everybody. It was the case with me. I'm also very much aware something else will happen, not can, but will happen, that will present me with another rough patch, another patch that may or may not be as easy to deal with. So the ease comes later down the line with some of the hard stuff, and yet it does come. So here we are. Authority, voice, and ease. How do you apply that in practical ways that will benefit your life right now? The first thing you must do, you must accept the idea that you have the power to understand narrative, authority, voice, and ease, and how when you set your mind to thinking of all four of those at the same time, you can do strategic planning around activities that you're going to do that will lead you to the end result, which will be ease. One thing that's important when you're thinking about these four elements and how you will apply them to your life, it's important that you give a bit of thought to your ego. And what I mean by your ego, the driver that's in there that gets you all attached to one outcome, and you're going to do this regardless of anything else around you, and you're letting the blinders come down on your eyes and refusing to see anything but the object that you're going for, which is right in front of you. In fact, if you open the blinders a bit and look to the right or to the left, you might discover other ways to go about achieving this particular goal that might have more ease and fit more into the productiveness of your narrative. Then when you have the ease and the productiveness of the narrative, you feel better about yourself. You're more confident. You have more authority. When you tell the story, you tell it with a bit of amusement in your voice, which adds a bit to how the story lands when someone hears it. So I would like to give you a practical application from my life on how narrative, authority, voice, and ease works. I am very easy at the moment. I'm sitting on a sun deck in Webster Groves, Missouri, which is a suburb of St. Louis, Walter and Margot Parks' house. I visited here very often on my travels back and forth from Taos, New Mexico to Asheville, Asheville to Taos, New Mexico. I like to stop over because it's a long drive from Asheville to Taos, about 1,575 miles. I like to break it up with a stop in St. Louis. I get to visit with Walter and Margot. Walter and I have worked together and been friends for many, many years. He's a terrific singer-songwriter, great designer. He can build a house. He can repair a guitar. He can produce records. He's a renaissance man when it comes to the world of music, the world of songwriting, the world of writing, as well as design. I love to be around Walter's thinking. What a great narrative. That alone makes for a good story. And Walter does have a lot of authority because he's practiced all his life. So much of Walter's authority comes from his willingness to show up, do the work, and practice all the time. I have never known Walter Parks to spend the day without focus on creative work that he's drawn to. If he's doing nothing other than sitting in a coffee shop thinking about it, he's still working on it. I love that about what Walter does. And Margot is a fantastic producer. She can make an event happen. She's a sound engineer, and she also understands accounting and business. So Margot is an excellent manager, yet another narrative that she tells. Now, Margot and Walter, of course, have ease in their life. They also have all of the other patches that we've already discussed. So why am I bringing up this trip to St. Louis from Asheville? Here's why. Keeping the idea of ease in mind, I wanted an easy trip. My question was, how do I make that easy trip happen? So often, ease comes based on the strategic decisions that you make. So I had two choices driving out of Asheville. First choice, which is one that I've done many, many times, drive west on Interstate 40, past Canton, past Waynesville, up through the Pigeon River Gorge, onto Knoxville, Tennessee. If you were in Asheville a couple of falls ago, you will recall Asheville was hit very hard with Hurricane Helene. Not only Asheville, the entire Western North Carolina region, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, and on up beyond that was hit hard with Hurricane Helene. Devastated the place. It also devastated Interstate 40 through the Pigeon River Gorge. That's a hard place to build a road no matter what the circumstances are, and I have no idea how long it took to build the original Interstate 40 through the Pigeon River Gorge. Imagine it took many, many years. So when the flood came from the Pigeon River and washed away the interstate completely, all four lanes, you can easily imagine how difficult it might be to rebuild the road. So all this time later, they're still working on the road, and you can still get through. You have to wait in a long line of traffic, and you have to go on the one lane through. And they're building and working, and yet it always gets clogged up. It's always wide open at 4 a.m. in the morning. So if you would like to drive from Asheville through the Pigeon River Gorge to Nashville, Tennessee, by way of Knoxville, then on to Taos by way of I-40, fine. You can go early in the morning, and you go right through. I was thinking, I didn't really want to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and drive 650 miles to Walter and Margot's house in Webster Groves, Missouri, outside of St. Louis. I thought, well, maybe I will split it up in 2 days. So here we are back to the narrative. One narrative that has a lot of stress in it, leave at 4 a.m. and drive really hard, 650 miles, arrive sometime late in the afternoon, tired like a dish rag, or split it in 2 days, take it easy on both days, arrive around 1 p.m. in the afternoon, fresh as a daisy. Or fresh, maybe not as a daisy, even though it is spring and the daisies may be out. So I'm back to strategy. I'm developing my narrative, and I want to develop the narrative of the drive in a way that will make things easy for me. So here's the problem that I faced, my narrative problem. I want to take it easy, drive to St. Louis area in 2 days. I don't need to leave very early in the morning. I can wait until early afternoon or maybe mid-afternoon before I leave. I can drive 300 or so miles, get near Nashville, stop over for the evening, and then drive on the next day. Very, very easy. And yet I'm facing a problem in this easy idea. Pigeon River Gorge. I'm planning to leave in the afternoon. Do I want to drive I-40, try to negotiate the long lines of traffic on that one-lane road through Pigeon River Gorge, or do I create a different narrative, one that will add 65 miles to the trip, go north on the proposed I-26 over Sam's Gap, down past the Nolichucky River to Johnson City, Tennessee, turn south on I-81, and head south down I-81 to where it feathers into I-40, just shy of Knoxville, Tennessee, fully clear of the Pigeon River Gorge. So you probably have guessed the choice I made. I decided to go north. I decided to spend 60 extra miles on the trip. I love the way I-26 threads over the mountains into Tennessee. It's wide, it's easy, there's very little traffic on it. I knew that ahead of time. The only caveat, an extra 60 miles. Was I willing to put in the extra 60 miles? Gas prices are high. Looking at $3.79 to $3.99 a gallon, filling up in Asheville, gas prices are rising as we speak, right now, today, as I'm sitting here on this sun porch in Walter and Margot's house. So there's very little ease around the narrative regarding gas prices. There's not much I can do about it either. But there was a lot I could do about finding ease regarding the choice I needed to make between long lines through the Pigeon River Gorge, the extra 60 miles over the mountain into Tennessee, I-81, headed to Knoxville. So I chose the mountain over Tennessee, and the moment I made that decision, I relaxed. I felt easier about myself. I was even a bit pleased with the thinking I had put into the decision I made to create a narrative, a story for my future that I knew would include ease. Now, here's how that ease paid off. Had I tried to race through this thing, had I felt stressed, had I felt like I was in a hurry, I likely would have been driving faster than I was as I went over the mountains into Tennessee. Sure enough, along the way, I saw at least two people pulled over for speeding. You know how that looks. Flash, 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 blue light in the distance, and somebody's been popped for speeding. I've had it happen to me before. I've been popped for speeding as well. We all likely have. Maybe you're lucky you haven't had that happen. But those of us who have had it happen, you know how it feels to sit there on the side of the road, a bit shamefaced, feeling a bit stupid. Why was I in such a hurry? What is 7 miles an hour compared to a ticket that I'm going to get that will raise my insurance for 3 years and create all kinds of problems for me? So I saw two of those situations going over the mountain into Tennessee. I was driving the speed limit. I was in no hurry. I had ease, not to mention in Western North Carolina and Eastern Tennessee in the April month. It's an absolutely exquisite time. And the sun was out and everything was bright and shiny, and I was easy. I always think of Dylan Thomas's poem, Fern Hill. I think I recited this recently on this show, but it starts out, "Oh, when I was young and easy under the apple boughs about the lilting house and happy as the grass was green the night above the dingle starry." So as I was young and easy in my car driving over Sam's Gap, North Carolina, the sky blue above me and the sun glistening off of the new leaves, I felt like a brand new dollar bill or a daisy or some kind of newborn bird flying for the first time over the ridge. Although this is nesting season, I don't know if the birds are out yet, the new ones, but there are birds flying over the ridge. The hawk's returning. The broadwing hawk flies above the ridge, returning to make a new nest for the spring. You get the point. There is an ease and a harmony in the world that we can engage in if we just allow ourselves to slow down a bit and enjoy the easy moments that will allow us to think things through. Thus, we're back to the strategy again. So keeping on a bit more with this story, once I cleared Knoxville, I headed west on toward Nashville, Tennessee. Often when I'm driving, I don't stop and stay at a hotel. I usually just find a nice spot, push my seat back, and sleep in the car. A lot of people don't like to do this. When I tell people I do this, they're sometimes concerned about my safety. Maybe there's something to that. They're concerned about how comfortable it will be. And yet I can tell you, having been on the road for many, many years and driving all over the place, some of the best naps I've ever had, they've happened in the driver's seat. Pull over, cool day, face the sun, push the seat back, let the sun drape over me, drift off to a deep, deep sleep, wake up an hour and 15 minutes later, completely, utterly refreshed. Now talk about a narrative with authority, voice, and ease. The nap in the car with the sun shining through the window, that's a great narrative to have. Knowing that I can do that is also a narrative that I have in my head that I can repeat over and over again. So sometimes when you get a successful narrative strategy in place, you can redo it over and over. I like to sleep in my car. So I'm driving on I-40 about 25 miles shy of Nashville, Tennessee, which is about 320 miles shy of my destination in St. Louis. So I spot a sign that says Pilot. Pilot is a truck stop. I often will stop at places like Pilot truck stops or Love's truck stops along the way because people are coming and going all night. It's 24 hours a day, lots of action, reasonably secure in those situations. So I pull off the road and take a left and go to the Pilot truck stop. I pull into the truck stop, and it did not feel right. Something was wrong. I didn't know what it was. It didn't look right. It didn't feel right. It was crowded. cars were bumper to bumper. There was something there that just had a bad vibe. Now, here we are, narrative, authority, voice, and ease. I drove into that parking lot, and I did not feel ease. I felt stress. I thought, there are narratives going on in this place I don't want to have anything to do with. Now, if I had been less attentive to my own narrative, being, this is not working for me, I might have been stubborn. I might have stuck with my ego. I might have said, well, I'll just park here and be done with it. What does it matter? And yet another narrative was playing out. There were the narratives in front of me. Feeling the vibe is another way of saying assessing the narratives of the situation. And then there was my narrative. And my narrative in that truck stop moment was unfolding. What's going on here? How do I feel? What's happening? Let's assess this. I don't want my ego to get in the way. No attachment to outcomes. What's happening in this narrative? How do I feel? I checked in. I felt stress. I didn't feel ease. When you're in a situation like this, there are other things going on. You can't actually know what kind of narratives are happening in a group of people, in a parking lot, even at a dinner table with people you know. Everybody has their own story. And even though there's narrative, authority, voice, and ease, another element is always at play that's worth paying attention to, and that's the element of intuition, the sense of things. You can't quite know why you know it, but there's a sense there, a fifth sense, a sixth sense. And it's often at play. Now, maybe that's not coming from some mystical place. Maybe it's a collection of all of your experiences being collated as you're moving through a situation. And those experiences bubble up and help you assess, create strategy around whatever situation you were involved in. Well, however it worked, I drove through that parking lot and I almost went against my deeper narrative knowing, and I almost stopped. Then something said, no, you simply can't stop here. You have to move on. So I did. I turned to the right and drove away from the parking lot, back towards the interstate. I crossed over the bridge, and on the other side of the bridge, I discovered a closed emergency care center. Not many lights shining in the parking lot. Place was empty. Convenience store across the street. Few cars going back and forth. Nobody at all around. So I pulled in, backed my car up, stopped, pushed the seat back, put the blankets over me, relaxed a bit, and fell asleep. I woke around dawn, started the car, and took an easy drive through Nashville before rush hour and headed northwest toward St. Louis. I stopped along the way and took some pictures of a graveyard and a Baptist church, did a few other stops along the way as well, just basically took my time, and I arrived here at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I had a lot of ease. There was no hurry. I didn't get any speeding tickets, and I had the whole afternoon ahead of me to visit, to write, to work at the desk, to grab a lunch, and go on from there. So now I'm sitting on Walter and Margot's sun porch. I can hear the birds chirping in the trees. Sun is warm. It's an easy afternoon. Things are easy right now as I record this show for you. So let's turn our attention back to the idea of generating written work using these four components: narrative, authority, voice, and ease. What you just heard me tell you was a story that I can turn into a transcript and tighten it up into a piece of written work. You don't have to generate work on the page by way of typing or writing longhand with a pen or a pencil in order to get something into text form. You can easily dictate it just like I am doing now. In fact, recently I was listening to a podcast Planet Money. You may be familiar with the podcast. It's produced by NPR, and the people who produce Planet Money and the hosts on Planet Money talk about the financial aspects of the world, the economics of the world. And in this podcast, they were discussing the book that was recently published of the same name, Planet Money. Basically, the book, which is now on the shelves, explains how the global economy works. The podcast has two parts, and I think the third part has yet to be released. They talk about what they went through to get this book published. Now, because Planet Money is a very popular NPR show with millions of listeners, the publishers in New York were very interested in the book. So there was a bidding war for this Planet Money book. And they start out by interviewing the two agents that represented Planet Money to the publishers in New York. And when you listen to the first section about representing your book by way of agents, you'll learn a bit about how it's done. They go into great detail on what you have to do to put a book out into the world in order to get a publisher to buy it. Basically, when you are offering your book to someone for publishing, you're asking the person that you are pitching it to fund your work for whatever the cost will be to produce the book. To scale, you can spend as much as $500,000 if you print 100,000 copies of a hardback. You can even spend more than that. So even a small book pushed out into the world in a proper self-publishing way can cost as much as $15,000 to $20,000 if you do it right, and that includes editing and writing it, putting all the promotion together, getting the design together, and all of that. So even though $20,000 might sound like a lot of money, it's actually not much in the publishing world. So Planet Money, since they are in fact in the podcast business, decided to do a story on what they went through to make this book happen. In the second podcast, after they've sold the book and are now doing a story on what you actually need to do to write the thing, they interview the editor. His name is Tom. And Tom is the chief editor at Norton. And he discusses what it takes to get authors to write their books and deliver the manuscripts on time. And one of the things I thought was most interesting about what Tom discussed was the strategy of getting the authors to record their ideas before they ever write anything down on paper, just like I'm recording this podcast right now. I like recording things out loud because it helps me to put the story together. It gives me a sense of how the narrative will eventually fold together. Again, narrative, authority, voice, and ease. Tom, the editor, didn't say if the people who were writing the Planet Money book used the technique of dictation and then turning the dictation into text. He just mentioned that some people who feel comfortable doing that can do it, no shade on it. It's a fantastic approach to figuring out what needs to be said, how it needs to be said. So Planet Money did indeed publish their book. It was released on April the 7th. Today is April the 22nd, and Planet Money is already doing shows based on their book. And guess what? It's working because I'm now using the Planet Money story in this podcast. So I'm basically promoting the Planet Money book, even though I've never read it. I just like the idea of listening to the process. Here we are, the narrative, the authority, the voice, and the ease. As Planet Money tells its story on the air by way of a podcast, all four of those elements are in place. And the ease is most especially in place because I am just retelling the story as I heard it on the podcast or on both podcasts while I was folding my clothes, getting ready to travel to Walter's house from Asheville. And then I listened to some of the program on the road as a podcast. So I didn't take notes. I just casually listened. And I remembered all of this because of the way they were telling the story. It's also interesting to me as well, because I am basically in the business of helping people put their books together and helping them get their books out into the world. Now, Planet Money has 1 million listeners. There's a very good chance the bet that Norton made on the Planet Money book will pay off, because people are going to be interested in buying the book. Why? They're interested in buying the book for two reasons. One, Planet Money has enough of a fan base so that thousands, even hundreds of thousands, maybe even 1 million people will hear about it and be interested in it. And two, everybody's interested in how they make money, save money, and what they do with it. So money is a big, big topic. Funny enough, in a lot of cultures, we're not supposed to talk about money. So Planet Money is breaking a little bit of a taboo by pushing this book out. So those are the two reasons it will sell. And there are plenty more as well. Point is, when you are putting together a book or putting together a story, if you have a good narrative, the narrative is how money works in the world. If you have the authority, and Planet Money's authority is, they're a strong podcast that has a lot of followers, and they've already had plenty of track records around making material and creating material that people can work with. Three, their voice is strong because it's a radio voice, and people lean into podcasts and to radio. And four, there's a great ease with Planet Money. And the reason why Planet Money has a lot of ease is because they have a sense of humor. They don't take themselves all that seriously. And yet they understand they're doing very serious work. And then a little side note on the Planet Money book. My next door neighbor in Taos, Janet, actually was the editor for the book. Tom was the senior editor. Janet was the one who received the manuscript, and she told me, "I'm getting a very secret manuscript, and I can't tell anybody about it until the book is published." And she was the one who did all of the close editing. She did the fact checking. She worked with the continuity. She worked for 6 weeks on that book. It was a big, big job. And then she submitted it back to Norton, and off it went. It was published. Nobody in the podcast mentioned Janet. Janet was one of many, many, many people who were involved in making that book work. Of course, if you are on your own and you're trying to put together a book that will splash big in the world, it requires a different narrative, authority, voice, and ease kind of strategy. The main strategy required if you're doing it alone is to dial back your expectations. First part of the narrative, rather than thinking gigantic because you know of other books like the Planet Money book that got $1 million advance. If you know why the Planet Money book got the $1 million advance, because the Planet Money book can help Norton promote the book to the scale Norton needs in order for the book to be a bestseller. If that book hits, which it likely will, the book will make back its $1 million plus what was required to publish it, which would be another $1 million, and it might go on to make a couple of more $1 million in profit. Why? Numbers. There are enough people out there interested in protecting their money, as well as enough of a fan base in order to make it worthwhile. Taylor Swift is another example of a person who has this range. She was able to fill those stadiums when she did her tour and move around the world for a couple of years because she had the numbers. Everyone wanted to experience a little bit of what she had to offer, and she was willing to share her magic dust with millions of people. So she had the numbers. She was able to generate the ticket sales plus the album sales. Planet Money certainly does not have the level of numbers Taylor Swift has. That said, Planet Money has well over 1 million people interested in what they do. So likely they'll sell the book. They'll also sell out any presentations they make along the way. They're doing a book tour. So the scale is large. And it's important to remember that if you're a solo person, your narrative, your authority, your voice, and your ease has to come from a different place. So the first part of the narrative is to do an analysis of what your range actually is. Now, I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. My creative collaborator, Allegra Houston, and I have been working in the publishing business for the last 5 years in a very concentrated way. Prior to that, we dabbled around in it a bit. Allegra's had a couple of books published to great reviews with proper publishers. I've had one book published by 3 Ataus Press, and it's a book of poetry, not to the same scale Allegra's had. Allegra and I have both been focusing on this a great deal. It's called the Imaginative Storm Writing Project. So our narrative is we're going to make material, make books, make courses that will help people create narratives and stories that they can put out in the world at whatever scale they feel like they can reach. So we have been working really hard on this. We have 5 different books that we have published. We've published them all solo, ourselves, self-published, so we don't have a proper publisher. We are hoping, our fingers crossed, maybe we'll pick up an agent along the way and the whole thing will get represented and maybe we'll get picked up by a company like Norton. Funny enough, Allegra Houston works as a Norton editor, so she takes on Norton Books and she knows the people who published the Planet Money book. All of that is to say we are in the mix and we are pleased about that. But we are not able to get the same kind of attention that Planet Money gets or Taylor Swift gets. Why? I wouldn't say it's because we're not famous enough. I would say it's because we simply don't have the level of numbers that would make what we're doing worthwhile to a bigger publisher. Sure, we're selling material. Yes, we have a lot of people who come to our workshops, and we do a lot of stuff for free as well. So our goal is to create work that will help you or whomever encounters us to have a more productive, vital experience around the writing or the creativity. Here we are back to the narrative, the authority, the voice, and the ease. I'm also bringing this up because we've focused a great deal on this in the last 5 years, and it's been a humbling experience. We've been humbled because, or at least I've been humbled, and maybe Allegra would report the same thing. I've been humbled because I thought surely with this much effort, we can really break through and get a lot of attention. Well, narrative, authority, voice, and ease. I had a great authority around that sensibility. Surely we'll break through. I was certain of myself. I was very confident. We actually have cracked a little bit. We've actually broken somewhat through. People are a bit aware of what we do. But we haven't really made a great splash. People aren't talking about it every day. Why? Maybe it's because what we offer isn't as productive as learning about how to save money so you will have security in your old age. We're talking about how to save your identity around being a writer. We're talking about how to get people to generate material that has a story, the narrative, authority, voice, and ease, something they want to tell. We are not focusing on the commercial aspect of it. We're not telling people, if you come to us, we will help you get a great book contract and you'll get the $1 million score. No, we're saying your voice is important. Your voice is worthwhile. What you have to say is important. What you have to say is worthwhile. And we want you to say it in ways that feel comfortable for you. We're competing with ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude, all the AI systems. We're competing with all the writing teachers that are out there. We're in the soup, just as I am right now, talking about this on Walter's porch, listening to the birds chirp in the foreground and the light shining on the trees. It's beautiful, actually, right now. Just had a little bit of a coffee and having a great time. So we are in this business, just like Planet Money is in the business of communicating something, getting a story out there, and engaging with the public. Now, I'm doing this personally, and here we come back to the narrative, the authority, the voice, and the ease. My personal reason for doing this is the same reason I've had since I was 18 years old, 20 years old. I've looked back on some of my boxes that have stuff in them, and I've come across old journals that I jotted down in my early 20s, just talking about my travels and whatnot. This whole time, I have always been curious about what I can engage in that will change a little bit of how one or two people might see the world. Not a great deal, just one or two. And I've been experimenting with that all this time. And has it gotten me great success? Has it won me great fans? Maybe a little bit. Do I have some antagonists out there? Sure. Do I have a lot of people who think what I say is of value to them? Yes. Are there a lot of people out there in this journey that I've taken who have given me information that has influenced me, changed my narrative, given me more authority, allowed me to have a stronger voice, created more ease? It's likely that more people have influenced me than I have influenced them. There's no way to measure that. The point is, it's extremely important for all of us to dig into the reasons why we do things. So here I am making this podcast. I've been airing this show on WPVM-FM for 10 years in Asheville, and I've been airing it for 5 years on KCEI-FM in Taos. I don't make any money on this show at all. It's community radio. Community radio is about, you guessed it, community. The narrative of community radio is we gather together in one place, we speak our stories, whatever they are. There's the authority in the voices that we use. They don't have to be clean and radio quality voice, although I know my voice does have a depth to it. And then the ease. I have an ease in talking right now. And the reason my ease is here is because I love to explore these kinds of notions. I love to travel around and collect moments in America, collect moments in Paris, collect moments wherever I am. Every place is local and every place is global. And when you remember that, you have a better chance at seasoning your narratives, seasoning yourself. And I'm grateful that over the years, I've been able to do all of this, and I'm grateful that I have the opportunity on community radio to express myself like this. Devine Dial, the woman who recruited me 10 years ago, asked me to interview people, and I've done that. I have over 300 interviews that I've done over the last number of years, last 10 years. But lately, I've started to do these kinds of shows where I'm talking like this. I'm tracking something. And community radio is a great place to do that. So narrative, authority, voice, and ease. We've traveled from Asheville to St. Louis. Planet Money's produced its book. I'm sure Janet is still my next door neighbor in Taos, and she's probably editing the next secret book that she can't talk about till it's published. Who knows? And I'm sitting here gratefully listening to somebody have a chainsaw event somewhere half a mile away, the birds in the trees, my gear is in the room. I'm going to pack it up tomorrow. I'm going to get up early in the morning and I'm going to start driving west to Taos. I'll take 2 days. I'm going to go through Dodge City. I don't know what's in Dodge City. It has a big reputation because people have made movies about Dodge City. It used to be the most violent city in the world, according to the legends. But according to some people, they did some research on Dodge City, and it wasn't any more violent back in the 1800s than any of the other places. It just happened that television came along and made movies about how dangerous Dodge City was. So there are a lot of narratives out there. Your narrative is essentially you. And I've heard more than one person say to me that the most important thing I can do in my life is be myself. And I think that's probably a great place to start with any of our narratives. Now, getting to the point where you can be yourself without feeling like you need to edit. I'm in the groove right now on this moment, being myself. This is the narrative. What you're hearing is my authority, my voice, and my ease. Somehow, I just caught a wave, and I'm talking into the microphone, closing this show down, saying the things that I feel like I want to say, hoping that somewhere along the way, narrative, authority, voice, and ease lands with you. Somewhere along the way, you start to get the sense that if you inventory your own vibe, your own essentialness, the who of who you are, you will discover the narrative that you're living is a narrative that is original, belongs only to you. It has never existed before. It will never exist again. It's fundamentally who you are. Now, your circumstances, good, bad, are you rich? Are you poor? Are you struggling? Are you happy? Are you joyous? Are you sitting on a back porch somewhere in the springtime? Are you worried about paying the next bill? Gas prices are high. I've mentioned that before. Maybe you're listening to this and you're thinking, I can no longer afford to drive to work. I have to invent myself again and again and again, and this is a struggle. If that's the case, then that's the narrative you have right now. How can you relax into that narrative? Look at what's going on. The sparrow chirping on the wire next door. I hear a blue jay on the fence. I'm feeling the warmth of the spring afternoon. Those are things that I can work with regardless of my narrative, regardless of how I feel physically, regardless of what's happened in the last minute. All of that stuff is around us. And so as I close this show, thinking about all of the stories that we have to tell, knowing that there are millions of narratives in the world, billions of narratives in the world going on all the time, we are humans. We are telling our stories. We are living into our stories. We're holding our children. We're wishing our graduates well when they leave home. We're toasting the newlyweds. We're honoring our elders. We are getting in our cars, driving down to the local grocery store. If you live in Taos, you may be going to Sid's or to Smith's to buy some granola. Whatever it is you're doing, you're living in your narrative. And if you're in Asheville, you may be going to Earth Fair or Whole Foods or the co-op downtown. Wherever it is you are, you're living into your narrative. And that's a good thing, I think. It has a poetic sensibility about it. I haven't talked much about poetry, but if you listen closely to your narrative, you abide with it a bit, you will find it has a lot of poetic sensibilities to offer you, along with knowledge and wisdom about where you need to go next, what you need to do, and how you can live into the story you tell, the story you live, which is the narrative, the authority you bring to it, which is the certainty that your story is important, the voice, which is uniquely yours. Your voice is the one thing people will recognize forever. They remember the voice over anything else. And when you pass on, a lot of people long to hear the voice. Oh my gosh, I wish I could hear my mother's voice just one more time. And somehow in all of that, life does offer a sense of ease. The end result, really. You get ready to fall asleep. You ease off into sleep, and you ease off into dreams. So here's wishing you all the good narratives to live into, and thank you for listening to this. I appreciate it very much, and I've been featuring the birds here at Walter's Place, so I hope you've enjoyed the bird songs underneath this. I paid them a fortune to sing for me. Actually, you don't have to pay a bit to have the birds sing, and if you read the Planet Money book, they'll probably say that. You can listen to the birds sing, and it's all good. So thanks once again for listening. I do appreciate it. And with that, before we go, I'd like to say you have been listening to Twice 5 Miles Radio. I'm your host, James Inave. I'd like to thank Walter Parks for our theme song, walterparks.com, for more on Walter's music. Devine Dial, thank you for managing Radio Asheville, WPVM-FM in Asheville, North Carolina. Robin Collier and Mike Tilley, thank you for managing KCEI, Cultural Energy Radio, in Taos, New Mexico. If you would like to join us for our free Imaginative Storm writing gathering, which happens between 12 and 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Zoom every Saturday, you can go to jamesnave.com, and there you will find the information for it, and we would love to have you join us. It's a great group of people. We have folks calling in from all over the world, and they pursue their imaginative writing, their imaginative intelligence, and we have conversations that track all kinds of ideas, like the one I just tracked in this show, Narrative Authority, Voice, and Ease. So there you go. I think we've pretty much covered the ground. I'll close with a couple of poems that do have narrative authority, voice, and ease. They're by Ogden Nash, and here they go. So we'll close with this. The termite knocked upon the wood, tasted it, and found it good. And that is why your Auntie May fell through the parlor floor today. Behold the hippopotamus. We laugh at how he looks to us. Yet in moments dank and grim, I wonder how we look to him. Peace, peace, thou hippopotamus. We really look all right to us, as you no doubt delight the eye of other hippopotami. So here's to delighting the eye of hippopotami. Thank you ever so much again for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. I hope you come back sometime soon. Till then, I'll catch you on that turnaround somewhere down the line.
We, the rock and roll generation, have never found ourselves defining first rock and roll song. Host Jamie DeLappa presents music and musicians you've never heard, who pioneered rock and roll. Songs that could have been the first rock and roll song. Songs that fill the gap in understanding where we came from and who we are today. Saturday afternoons at 2, here on Radio Asheville.
Goodbye, Joe. Me got to go on me on my own. Go hold a bureau down the bayou. With Yvonne, sweet as one, me on my own. Son of a gun, I had big fun on the bio. They sit her down, far from town, I gon' build a bureau. So I can catch all the fish on the bio. With Yvonne, my sweetest one, me on my yah-yah-yah-oh. Son of a gun, have big fun on the bio. Well, Jim alive, throw fish pie, I feel it gumbo. Cause tonight I see mommy sitting here. Big guitar, feel full joy every day, oh. Son of a gun, have big fun on the bio. Well, from Thibodeau, the Fontainebleau, the places buzzing. Kinfolk come to see Yvonne by the dozen. Dress in style, go hog wild, me and my old. Son of a gun, have big fun on the bio. Well, Jim alive, roll fish pie, I feel it gumbo. Cause tonight, see mommy shitting me up. Big guitar, feel for joy every day. Son of a gun, have big fun on the bayou. I sit down and did a few rolls. You know that I'm gonna catch all that crawfish on.